And good afternoon. You're listening to Ken Hudnall. This is the Ken Hudnall Show. Coming to you from our studios right here in exciting El Paso, Texas. Gateway to the Old West. The most haunted city in the country. Well, today is March 17th. 76th day of the year. 289 days remain to the end of the year. On this day in history, in 45 BC, in his last victory, Julius Caesar defeats the Pompeian forces of Titus Labienus and Pompey the Younger in the Battle of Munda. In the year 180 AD, Commodus becomes sole emperor of the Roman Empire at the age of 18. It was after the death of his father, Marcus Aurelius. In 455, Petronius Maximus becomes, with the support of the Roman Senate, emperor of the Western Roman Empire. And with that victory under his belt, he forces Lucinia Eudoxia, the widow of his predecessor, Valentinian III, to marry him. Apparently, he wanted to get it on with the widow. 1337, Edward the Black Prince is made Duke of Cornwall, the first duchy in England. 1401, Turco-Mongol Emperor Timur sacks Damascus. 1776, American Revolution. British Army evacuates Boston. It ends the siege of Boston after George Washington and Henry Knox put artillery in positions overlooking the city. 1805, the Italian Republic, with Napoleon as president, becomes the Kingdom of Italy. And Napoleon becomes the King of Italy. 1824, the Anglo-Dutch Treaty is signed in London. That divides the Malay Archipelago. As a result, the Malay Peninsula is dominated by the British. Sumatra, Java, and the surrounding areas are dominated by the Dutch. 1860, the first Taranaki War begins in Taranaki, New Zealand. It was a major phase of the New Zealand Wars. 1861, the Kingdom of Italy is proclaimed. 1891, SS Utopia collides with HMS Anson in the Bay of Gibraltar and sinks. Of the 880 passengers on board, 562 die. 1921, the Second Polish Republic adopts the March Constitution. In 1942, during the Holocaust, the first Jews from the Lvov ghetto are gassed at the Belzec death camp in what's today is Eastern Poland. 1945, the Ludendorff Bridge in Remagen, Germany collapses 10 days after it was captured. 1948, Belgium, France, Luxembourg, and the Netherlands, and the UK signed the Treaty of Brussels. It was a preliminary to the North Atlantic Treaty establishing NATO. 1950, Research University of California, Berkeley, announced the creation of Element 98, which they named Californium. 1957, a plane crash in Cebu, Philippines, kills Philippine President Ramon Magsaysay and 24 others. 1958, the U.S. launches the first solar-powered satellite, which is also the first satellite to achieve a long-term orbit. 1960, President Dwight Eisenhower signs the National Security Council directive on the anti-Cuban covert action program that ultimately led to the Bay of Pigs invasion. 1963, Mount Agung erupts on Bali, killing more than 1,100 people. 1966, off the coast of Spain in the Mediterranean, the DSV Alvin submarine finds a missing American hydrogen bomb. 1968, as a result of nerve gas testing by the U.S. Army Chemical Corps in Skull Valley, Utah, over 6,000 sheep are found dead. 1969, Golda Meir becomes the first female prime minister of Israel. 1973, the Pulitzer Prize-winning photograph, Burst of Joy, is taken It shows a former prisoner of war being united with his family. And that came to symbolize the end of the U.S. involvement in the Vietnam War. 1979, the Pin Machiel Tunnel collapses during engineering works. Two workers are killed. 1985, serial killer Richard Ramirez, known as the Night Stalker, commits the first two murders in his Los Angeles murder spree on this date. It's interesting how he was captured. He tried to steal the car sitting in somebody's carport, not realizing the driver was underneath the car working on it. Wound up being chased down by a mob and beaten senseless till the police showed up. 1988, a Colombian Boeing 727 jetliner, Avianca Flight 410, crashes into a mountainside near the Venezuelan border. 143 people die. 1988, Eritrean War of Independence. The NATO Command, an Ethiopian Army Corps in Eritrea, is attacked on three sides by military units of the Eritrean People Liberation Front in the opening action of the Battle of Afebet. 1992, Israeli embassy attack in Buenos Aires. Car bomb attack kills 29, injures 242. 1992, a referendum to end apartheid in South Africa is passed, 68.7% to 31.2%. 2,530 members of the Ugandan cult movement for the restoration of the Ten Commandments of God die in a fire. It's considered to either be mass murder or mass suicide orchestrated by leaders of the cult. Elsewhere, another 248 members are later found dead. 2003, Secretary of State for Foreign and Commonwealth Affairs Robin Cook resigns from the British cabinet. He has a disagreement with government plans for the 2003 invasion of Iraq. And in 2004, unrest in Kosovo. More than 22 are killed and 200 wounded. 35 Serbian Orthodox shrines in Kosovo and two mosques in Serbia are destroyed. No one claimed responsibility. Holidays and observances. Children's Day in Bangladesh. Christian Feast Day. Alexis of Rome in the Eastern Church. Gertrude of Nivelles. John Sarkander. Joseph of Arimathea in the Western Church. Patrick of Ireland. March Evacuation Day in Suffolk County, Massachusetts. And St. Patrick's Day, a public holiday in Ireland, Montserrat, the Canadian provinces of Newfoundland and Labrador. Widely celebrated in the English-speaking world and to a lesser degree in other parts of the world. And this being St. Patrick's Day, it's it commemorates the death, as legend has it, of Patrick, the patron saint of Ireland. This was in the year 492. It's also the occasion in many American cities of people celebrating their Irish heritage with a parade. Now, he brought Christianity to Ireland, and it's believed he died in the small village of Saul, not far from the town of Downpatrick in County Down, where he's supposed to be buried. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But it is interesting to note that he's also supposed to have been the one to chase the snakes out of Ireland. And we know that took place because most of them went to the U.S. Congress. All right, let's talk about other things that happened on March 17th. Now, in 432, St. Patrick, who was about 16 at the time, was captured by Irish pirates from his home in Great Britain and taken as a slave to Ireland. At least that is the story that has come down to us. In 455, Roman senator Petronius Maximus becomes emperor of Rome. In 1190, the Crusades complete the massacre of Jews of York, England. In 1521, Portuguese navigator Ferdinand Magellan reaches the Philippines. 1526, the French king, Francis I, is freed from Spain. 1537, French troops invade Flanders. 1580, Prince William of Orange is welcomed in Amsterdam. And in 1658, a pro-Charles II plot in England is discovered. In 1722, Wilhelm F.H. Friso appointed mayor of Drenthe. And in 1756, St. Patrick's Day was first celebrated in New York City at the Crown and Thistle Tavern. 1757, Prince Mas Said of Mataram surrenders to Mankubumi in Java. 1762 was the first St. Patrick's Parade in New York City. 1775, the Transylvania Land Company, headed by Richard Henderson, buys most of Kentucky. And he did that through a treaty signed with Cherokee chiefs at Sycamore Shoals on the Watauga River. That treaty was later declared to be illegal. 1800, British warship Queen Charlotte catches fire. 700 members of the crew die. 1829, the greatest clown in history did his final performance. His name was Joseph Grimaldi. He did a benefit performance at Sadler's Wells in London. 1829, I would have thought the greatest clown in history was one of our senators, but that's another story. 1845, a Bristol man by the name of Henry Jones patents self-rising flour. 1845, the rubber band was patented by Stephen Perry of London. 1860, 6 years after the forcible ending of Japan's isolationist policy by the U.S. Navy, the Japanese embassy arrives in San Francisco to sign a treaty of friendship. And Japan was forced to open up by none other than U.S. Navy Commodore Matthew C. Perry. 1861, Italy is unified into a single kingdom under Victor Emmanuel II. He was king of Sardinia and Italy. That was after campaigns led by Giuseppe Garibaldi. 1868, the postage stamp canceling machine patent is issued. 1870, the Massachusetts legislature authorizes the incorporation of Wellesley Female Seminary. 1876, General Crook destroys Cheyenne and Ogallala Sioux Indian camps. 1884, John Joseph Montgomery makes the first glider flight at Otay, California. 1894, the U.S. and China sign a treaty preventing Chinese laborers from entering the U.S. That was supposed to be only for, I think, 10 years, but it lasted till 1943. In 1898, John Philip Holland achieves the successful test run for the first modern submarine off Staten Island. He submerged and stayed down for 1 hour and 40 minutes. 1899, the Windsor Luxury Hotel in New York City catches on fire. 92 people die before the fire can be put out. In 1900, on this date in South Africa, British troops relieve Mafeking, which had been besieged by the Boers since October 13th, 1899. In 1905, Albert Einstein finishes his scientific paper detailing his quantum theory of light, one of the foundations of modern physics. In 1906, the Phi Kappa Tau fraternity is founded at Miami University in Oxford, Ohio. 1912, Campfire Girls organization is announced by Mrs. Luther Halsey Gulick. 1913, the Uruguayan Air Force is founded. 1917, Delta Phi Upsilon is founded at New York University Law School. 1917, Albert Anastasia, the gangster who is supposed to be the chief of Murder Incorporated, is convicted of murdering longshoreman George Torino. 1921, Dr. Marie Stopes opens Britain's first birth control clinic in London. 1921, Lenin proclaims the new economic politics. It was going to make everybody a millionaire. 1926, Spain and Brazil prevent Germany from joining the League of Nations. 1927, the U.S. government does not sign the League of Nations Disarmament Treaty. 1929, General Motors acquires the German auto manufacturer Adam Opel. 1929, Spanish dictator Primo de Rivera closes the University of Madrid. On this date, 1932, German police raid Adolf Hitler's Nazi headquarters. 1934, Dollfuss, Mussolini, and Gombos signed the Protocols of Rome. 1938, the Italian Air Force, that supported Francisco Franco, bombed Barcelona during the Spanish Civil War. 1939, the Battle of Nanchang between the Kuomintang and the Japanese breakout. That was during the Sino-Japanese War of 1937 and 1945. 1942, General Douglas MacArthur arrives in Australia to become the Supreme Commander. 1943, Alda Marin and Fort Cedar Lake are torpedoed and sink. Their ships. 1943, physician Wilhelm Kauff performs the world's first hemodialysis using his artificial kidney machine. The treatment's unsuccessful and the patient dies in the Netherlands. But the procedure worked, so there was a bright side. 1945, Allied ships bombed North Sumatra. 1944, Mount Vesuvius in Italy erupts after months of volcanic arrest, destroys several towns near the volcano. 1953, the U.S. performs nuclear test at the Nevada test site. 1957, the Dutch ban on Sunday driving is lifted. 1960, President Eisenhower forms an anti-Castro exile army under command of the CIA, and that's the army that was decimated in the Bay of Pigs, and most of them were either killed or imprisoned. Well, with the history session having been ended, let's start out talking about somebody that I was asked about the other day. The Kentucky Wild Man. March 27, 1907, Nevada-based Reno Evening Gazette ran a story with the eye-catching title of Wild Man Startles People of Kentucky. And the subtitle was even more unusual. Hairy creature seen by farmhand, and both are so scared that they're prepared to run. Now, according to the story, information has been received that the people in the county around Buena Vista, a village in Girard County, are much excited over the reports of a wild man lives in the Kentucky River Hills near that little village. Parties being organized to explore a cave where the creature is believed to have his lair and attempt to capture him. Now, according to the story, one Jim Peters, who was a farmhand working for a man named S.D. Scott, who was the postmaster of Buena Vista, encountered this hair-covered man-thing in the Bowman's Woods in the vicinity of Highbridge. Now, Peters believes the wild man was attracted by the scent of his dog. And in the presence of the hair-covered thing, Peters' faithful pet responded by yelping, showing every evidence of being extremely frightened. Peters was just as terrified as the dog, and that terror increased when the thing approached to within 60 feet of the pair. Now, according to the article, Peter said he was too frightened to run. The apparition kept its eyes on the dog until asked what it was doing there. Now, not surprisingly, the creature didn't respond in English or, in fact, any known language. Instead, it turned and vanished into the dense woodland. Now, fortunately, Peters had been able to get a good look at the creature. He described it as having long, dark, wild hair, completely hairy body of a dark appearance, wore a coonskin tied about its loins, and had claw-like talons instead of fingernails. See what happens when you don't get regular manicures. Well, when petrified Peters finally made it back to Buena Vista, he breathlessly told his story to his boss, S.D. Scott, what had just happened, and Scott, seeing that Peters was serious, not pulling a prank, got a posse together to track down what may be, in his mind, some type of Bigfoot-like creature. And they didn't find the creature, but they found tracks in the mud of the riverbank. And local men and, one more time. Local women and children are said to be too scared to leave their homes, and the most popular theory, although an extremely unlikely one, considering the physical appearance of the creature, was that the man monster escaped from a lunatic asylum. It was an asylum not too far from there. Evidently, the wild man got wind of the fact he was being hunted and headed off for the new pastures. There's no reports of him being seen after this. Then in India, we have the Mandy Barung. This story comes from October 31st, 2010. A team from the British-based Center for Fortean Zoology embarked on a truly ambitious expedition to the Garo Hills in northern India in search of a legendary, hairy, man-like beast known as the Mandy Barung. Or in simpler terms, the Indian equivalent of the U.S. Bigfoot and the abominable snowman of Tibet. The five-man team was led by Adam Davies, author of the monster hunting theme book Extreme Expeditions, and the team was made up of Dr. Chris Clark, Dave Archer, field naturalist John McGowan, cryptozoologist Richard Freeman, and the author of the book Dragons and More Than a Myth. Now, Jonathan Downs, the founder and director of the Center for Fortean Zoology, said of these strange and elusive creatures that they're described as being up to 10 feet tall with predominantly black hair. And they're said to walk upright, which is a very important factor. Walking apes have been reported in the area for many, many years, and these descriptions sound almost identical to those reported in neighboring Bhutan and Tibet. Witnesses report that the mighty Burung, which translates as forest man, is most often seen in the area in November. According to Downs, the Garo Hills are a heavily forested and poorly explored area in Meghalaya State in the cool northern highlands of India. This area is internationally known for its wildlife, which includes tigers and bears and elephants and Indian rhino and clouded leopards. He went on to say the Indian team would be led by Dipu Murek, a local expert who's been on the trail of the Indian Yeti for a number of years and on a number of locations, on a number of occasions, has found its nest and 19-inch long footprints. That's a good sized foot, I don't care who you are. The expedition team has also arranged to interview eyewitnesses who've seen the Mandi Burung up close. Camera traps were also set up in sighting areas in the hope of maybe getting one of these creatures on film. And as for what these creatures might be, Downs had a few thought-provoking ideas. He said the Mandi Burung may be a surviving form of a giant ape known for its fossilized teeth and jawbones, called the Gigantopithecus blackie, which lived in the Pleistocene epoch about 300,000 years ago. Now, most people believe this creature, of course, is extinct. But contemporary fauna, such as the giant panda and the Asian tapir and the Asian elephant that lived alongside the monster ape, still survive today, so why couldn't the Gigantopithecus blackie? In fact, many people think that the Gigantopithecus survives in the impenetrable jungles and mountains of Asia. Its closest known relatives are the orangutans of Sumatra and Borneo. And as Downs noted, the Center for Fortean Zoology, intrepid explorers were no strangers to heading off into the vast unknown in search of mysterious and elusive creatures. So the last year, the team, who investigated mystery animals all over the world, traveled to Sumatra in search of a small bipedal ape known as the Orang Pendek. Dave Archer and a local guide, Sahar Didmus, saw the creature, and the group brought back hair that was later analyzed by Dr. Lars Thomas at the University of Copenhagen. The DNA proved to be similar to an orangutan's, an animal not found in that part of Sumatra. And while the team was successful in finding a large body of highly credible witnesses to the Indian Bigfoot, they didn't find what you might describe as the smoking gun. They say they'll go back on another quest. Then we have, in England, the man monkey of the Shropshire Union Canal. Now, the Shropshire Union Canal, or Shroppy as it's called by the locals, was built in the early part of the 19th century. It's come to be affectionately and popularly known by those who regularly travel its extensive and winding waters. It's 67 miles in length and extends from Ellesmere Port near the city of Liverpool right down to Otherley Junction at Wolverhampton in the Midlands. The southern end of the old canal, which was originally known as the Birmingham and Liverpool Junction Canal, was the very last of the great British narrow boat canals to be built. It's a true testament to the masterful engineering of Thomas Telford. Deep cuttings and massive embankments are the veritable hallmarks of the canal, and they paint a picture that's as eerie as it is picturesque. The Shropshire Union Canal is quite possibly Britain's most haunted waterway. Local folks that intimately know it and appreciate the history and lore of the canal are only too well aware of some of the odd things that have happened there. At Chester's old north gate, for example, where the canal is dug into part of the town's old moat, a ghostly Roman centurion can be seen. This happens, especially when circumstances are said to be right. And it still seems to be guarding the ancient entrance to the city. Then there's the shrieking specter of Belton Cutting, which is a veritable wailing banshee-style monstrosity that strikes cold, stark fear into the hearts of those who have the misfortune and bad luck to cross the path of the creature. At the site of the former lockkeeper's cottage in Birdsden, on a nearby Montgomery Canal, some intriguing reports of the ghostly ethereal figure of an early Welsh prince named Ira have been reported. In bringing matters relatively more up to date, there's a spectral American Air Force pilot whose aircraft crashed near the canal that little on at Church Eaton in Staffordshire during the Second World War. Then there's the helpful resident ghost of the Turley Middle Lock at Market Drayton. This ghost has allegedly been seen opening and closing the lock gates for those novice holidaying boaters who from time to time negotiate the waters of the canal. And then, of course, there's the most famous, or maybe we use the word infamous, ghostly resident of the Shropshire Union Canal. It's a truly diabolical, devilish entity that's become known as the Man Monkey. The very same hairy creature that in January of 1986 caused quite a bit of upset in that general area. It's in one of the back pages of Charlotte Sophia Burns' book of 1883, Shropshire Folklore, that the antics is what some have since perceived to be the closest thing that Britain may have to the North American Bigfoot, were first unleashed on an unsuspecting public. According to Byrne, a very weird story of an encounter with an animal, ghost, arose of late years within my knowledge. On the 21st day of January, 1879, a laboring man was employed to take a cart of luggage from Ranton in Staffordshire to Woodcock, beyond Newport in Shropshire, for the ease of a party of visitors that were going from one house to another. He was late coming back. His horse was tired and could only crawl along at a foot's pace. So it was about 10 o'clock at night when he arrived at the place where the high road crosses the Birmingham and Liverpool Canal. It was then, according to Byrne, that the man received what was undoubtedly the most terrifying shock of his entire life. Just before he got to the canal bridge, a strange black creature with great white eyes sprang out of the plantation by the roadside and landed astride his horse's back. Now, he tried to push it off with his whip, but to his horror, the whip went right through the thing and he dropped it on the ground in fright. Needless to say, the poor tired horse broke into a canter at that point, rushed onward at full speed with the ghost still clinging to its back. Now, when the creature disappeared, the man really didn't realize. He was hanging on for dear life and just praying that that creature went away. Now, the story was far from over at this point, though. He told his tale in the village of Woodseaves, a mile further on, and so effectively frightened the hearers that one man actually stayed with friends there all night rather than cross the bridge which lay between him and his home. Now, according to that story, by the time he reached the village of Woodseaves, the unnamed man was in a state of excessive terror and promptly retired to his bed for several days. So much was he prostrated by his fright. And on the following day, another individual traveled back to the sinister bridge, and sure enough, there was the man's whip, still lying at the very place where it had fallen to the ground after the bizarre encounter. Almost inevitably, dark tales of the crazed beast and its infernal nighttime activities began to spread that like absolute wildfire through the villages and hamlets of the area. The adventure was, as was natural, was much talked about in the neighborhood, and of course with all sorts of variations. But it seems that the local constabulary had heard all about the nature and exploits of the hairy demon and knew exactly what was afoot. That was according to Byrne in her book. Some days later, the man's master was surprised by a visit from a policeman who came to request him to give information of his having been stopped and robbed on the big bridge on the night of January 21st. Now, the master, as they called him, was apparently very much amused by this development in the escalating and mutating story, explained to the visiting policeman this was not true. In reality, it was his employee who had reported a strange encounter at the big bridge. But there was most definitely no robbery involved at all. Interestingly enough, when the real details of what had occurred were related to the policeman, he was seemingly completely nonplussed. Came to the realization no actual crime had been committed at all, merely replied in a distinctly matter-of-fact fashion. Oh, was that all it was? Oh, I know what that was. That was the man-monkey. It does come again to that bridge ever since the man was drowned in the cut. Now, Charlotte Byrne went on to reveal that she personally had the opportunity to speak with the man's employer, but she didn't go into great detail about what he had to say. Nevertheless, Byrne did give a little bit of description. They said his name began with a B. And although the man's name remains unknown to us, and probably always will, the city where this happened is very possibly in a reference to the ancient nearby Staffordshire city of Litchfield. So what precisely was the strange hairy critter that was seen wildly roaming the distinctly darkened corners of the Shropshire Union Canal by moonlight on that winter's night back in January of 1879? Was it actually a form of Bigfoot or a Yeti-like creature? Could it potentially have been an exotic escapee of the simian kind? Maybe one that originated with a private zoo somewhere in that area? Or even a traveling menagerie of the type that were indeed popular back in those days? Did it have the wholly supernatural and paranormal origins rather than purely physical ones? Or was it something else entirely? There are a lot of questions, but not a lot of answers. But on the matter of the man-monkey, Elliot O'Donnell was a prestigious author who wrote dozens of titles on the world of the paranormal, who died in 1965 at the age of 93. In his 1912 book entitled Werewolves, he said it's an old belief that the soul of cataleptic and epileptic people during the body's unconsciousness adjourned temporarily to animals. And it's therefore only in keeping with such a view to suggest that on the deaths of these people, their spirits take up permanently the form of animals. And according to O'Donnell, this accounted for the fact that the places where these people died are often haunted by semi and wholly animal types of phantasms. Dr. David Clark notes that the story of the man-monkey identifies it as a human revenant who returns to haunt a bridge in animal form. The manner of its appearance in the form of a strange black creature with great white eyes and the fear it created by its actions leaping on the back of the horse resonates with contemporary accounts of ghostly activity elsewhere. The human dead returning in animal forms was not the only theory suggested for the presence of the man-monkey. One rumor that quickly circulated in the area was that a gorilla had escaped from a traveling menagerie that recently visited a nearby town of Newport. While it's not entirely impossible that just such a creature could have briefly survived in the cold wilds of Staffordshire, it should be noted that the circus escapee theory is one that's been trotted out on numerous occasions, all across the world, as a matter of fact. It's been used to try and rationalize reports similar to that of the man-monkey. In nearly all cases, though, there's absolutely no evidence of any such escapee ever found. There is, however, clearly something supernatural about the man-monkey. Sightings are the always solitary beasts that continue to be reported into the 21st century. And they're almost identical in nature. The location is usually Bridge 39. And when seen, the monster jumps out of the trees and terrifies the unwary. Displays qualities and characteristics that are part flesh and blood and part spectral. Whatever the true nature of Ranton's resident, Harry Monster Man, it shows no signs of leaving its tree-covered haunt anytime soon. So, should you one day find yourself in the vicinity of Ranton, if you're forced to cross Bridge 39, take care. The man-monkey may be waiting in the wooded wings, ready to strike at a moment's notice. Well, most people have heard of the Bigfoot of the United States and the Abominable Snowman from the Himalayas. But somewhat less well known is Australian equivalent, the Yowie. A tall, hair-covered humanoid that appears to be some form of great ape. Within the pages of December 9, 1882 issue of the Australian Town and Country Journal that the story of the Yowie was first told. And it's a story that came from an amateur naturalist, Henry James McCooey. And according to Mr. McCooey, a few days ago I saw one of these strange animals in an unfrequented locality on the coast between Bateman's Bay and Ooladoola. My attention was attracted to it by the cries of a number of small birds that were pursuing and darting at it. When I first beheld the creature, it was standing on its hind legs, partly upright, looking up at the birds above it in the bushes, blinking its eyes and distorting its visage and making a low chattering kind of noise. Now, being above the animal on a slight elevation and distant from it less than a chain, I had an ample opportunity to note its size and general appearance. I should think if it were standing perfectly upright, it'd be nearly 5 feet high. It was tailless and covered with long black hair, which was of a dirty red or snuff color about the throat and breast. Its eyes, that were small and restless, were partly hidden by matted hair that covered its head. The length of the forelegs or arms seemed to be strikingly out of proportion with the rest of its body. But in all other respects, its bill seemed to be fairly proportional. And my guess was it would weigh about 112 pounds. On the whole, it was most uncouth and repulsive-looking creature, evidently possessing a prodigious strength, and one that I shouldn't care to come close quarters with. Having sufficiently satisfied my curiosity, I threw a stone at the animal, whereupon it immediately rushed off, followed by the birds, disappeared into a ravine that was close by. As debate concerning Mr. McCooey's report grew, he submitted more and more communications to the Australian Town and Country Journal, all of which are well worth investigating. He said the mere fact that no apes found in the Sydney Museum doesn't justify us in rushing to the conclusion there are none in the colony, for it's extremely improbable that any ape would be foolhardy enough to present itself at the museum to undergo the somewhat delicate operation of stuffing. Beyond the fact that there are none to be found in the Sydney Museum, there's not one scintilla of evidence to prove they're not to be found in the colony. And there's abundant evidence to show that, in fact, they are. He said, I don't claim to be the first to have seen the animal, because I can put my finger on half a dozen men at Bateman's Bay who've seen the creature, or at any rate an animal of similar description. But I think I'm the first to come forward in the columns of a newspaper and give publicity to the fact that I've seen it. And I may mention that a search party was organized at Bateman's Bay some months ago to surround the locality of the supposed ape and shoot or capture it. But the idea was abandoned in consequence of the likelihood of gun accidents. And I may further state that the skeleton of an ape, 4 feet in length, may be seen at any time in a cave 14 miles from Bateman's Bay in the direction of Ooladoola. A year later, in 1883, McCooey said that there's some indigenous apes in this colony. They've been frequently seen in the Buttawong Mountains, in Jingara Mountains, and in the Abercrombie Mountains, at Bateman's Bay, at Mount McDonald, and on the Guy Fawkes Road between Armadale and Grafton. Apes are known to the Aborigines of this colony and were dreaded by them long before a museum was founded in Australia, or a white man crossed the Murray, and one that was actually captured and killed near Briarwood within the memory of people still living. Well, clearly, the mere fact it's not in a museum is not proof that it doesn't exist. It's just proof that it's been able to elude pursuit. Let's talk about the Mono Grande. From various parts of South America, including Colombia, Ecuador, and Venezuela, are stories of a massive, mighty, and extremely violent Bigfoot known as Mono Grande. One of the most fascinating and also disturbing and tragic stories came from one Count Pino Tirola, a noted archaeologist who traveled the world, Indiana Jones style, in pursuit of all things mysterious and fabulous. Tirola, who died in 1984 at the early age of 62, was born in Yugoslavia and immigrated to Canada. Of note, he developed what became known as the Tirola Controlled Descent Parachute that was used by the U.S. military. Traveling across South America in the 1960s, he first heard about the marauding monster. The information came from Tirola's personal guide, Antonio, who told a shocking story. According to Antonio, some years before, he and his two sons traveled into a particular range of Venezuela where they were confronted on a sprawling savanna by a trio of enormous gorilla-like animals that were around 8 feet in height, had long hanging arms and tiny heads. Not only had that, but they were armed with large and crudely fashioned wooden clubs. A violent altercation occurred as a result of one of Antonio's sons being bludgeoned to death by these creatures. Now, Tirolo didn't have time to investigate the matter, the Mato Grande at the time, but 6 months later, he was back. And this time, it wasn't ancient historical artifacts he was looking for. It was for the South American Bigfoot itself. He hooked up with Antonio again, and they, along with three other native men, headed off to where Antonio's son had been killed in bloody fashion. And the story told by Tirolo about this little venture was well worth repeating. When we set out from camp, we began hiking southeast across the savannah, and after a few hours entered the forest, where we followed a narrow track through undergrowth so thick it reduced our vision to only a few feet on either side. Only now and then did a small clearing enable us to have a field view of 6 to 10 meters ahead. Now, I would point out, if you never spend any time in the jungle, especially in South America, somebody can be standing 3 feet from you and you can't see them because of the undergrowth. When we entered the canyon where Antonio had seen the big mono, the Indians became very alert and apprehensive, stepped carefully and sensing every sound and movement in the brush around them. I was carrying a 3.5 Winchester automatic and kept it at the ready. Tension was mounting as we slowly made our way along the trail. The subdued light created lurking shadows and a mood of mystery and suspense. It was getting toward the afternoon when suddenly we heard a howl, very loud, coming from somewhere in the thick vegetation. The Indians froze. The howl was as loud as the roar of a jaguar, but it was higher and shriller in pitch. It reverberated through the forest, encircling us as it came from all directions. And there was definitely something moving, crashing powerfully through the underbrush. Well, the Indians turned abruptly and raced back along the trail, yelling at me to follow. But I was frozen in my tracks, my heart beating so hard I could hear it. And suddenly the howling stopped. I waited, and when I had regained control of my movement, I advanced slowly along the trail, my finger on the trigger. When I got to a small clearing, the howling started again, in one crescendo after another. But as suddenly as it started, it stopped. It was then I saw two furry patches running away from me with a leaping sort of step through the foliage that bordered the clearing. As they bounded across the surface of a group of boulders at the far end of the clearing, I was able to catch a fleeting glimpse of them. They clearly were erect, hairy, ape-like creature and appeared to be over 5 feet tall. Then they disappeared around the rocks into the jungle, and I heard the cracking sounds of dry twigs and branches as they hastily forged their way through the thick underbrush. I waited for what seemed an eternity for something to happen, trying to impress on my mind what I had just seen. I opened my mouth to call to my companions, but no sound came out. Finally, I turned, retraced my steps, and encountered them advancing back up the trail. When I met them, I said, "They're gone." Nobody uttered a word. We continued up the trail, and we didn't see or hear anything else. But clearly, there are Bigfoot-type creatures on almost every major continent. Let's talk about the monsters of the pubs. According to monster hunter Neil Arnold, many years ago when I first began writing for Animals and Men magazine, that's the Center for Fortean Zoology and House magazine, I mentioned to John Down something regarding cryptozoological pub signs. Now, there are many St. George and the Dragon signs, and I know a few which also mentioned unicorns. But one particular pub sign, which is of great interest to me, is that which belongs to the Wild Man at 29 Bedford Street in Norwich in England. Now, most pub signs have a meaning, but the legend which pertains to the Wild Man is extremely intriguing. According to folklore, many, many years ago, a 6-year-old boy named Peter became lost in a wood in Germany. 6 years after that, the boy had become grown wild and in naked form would prowl the woods, living alongside the resident animals. Eventually, he was found and picked up by a traveling showman who exhibited him throughout Europe. According to Neil, St. Mary's North Church adds more to the legend, because within its walls there's a description that reads, "To the memory of Peter, known as the Wild Boy, having been found wild in the forest of Hirschwald, near Hanover in the year 1725. He then appeared to be about 12 years old. In the following year, he is brought to England by the order of the late Queen Caroline, and the ablest masters are provided for him. But proving himself incapable of speaking or receiving any instruction of comfortable provisions made for him at a farm in this parish, where he continued the end of his inoffensive life. He died on February 22nd, 1785. It was said he was age 72 at the time. But you have to ask yourself why there's an association between Wild Peter and the Norwich-based pub itself that led the owner to even name the inn after this slightly tragic soul. Well, according to further information, about 1751, Peter was housed at the public house. In the past, a sign would depict this unfortunate creature's demonic character amid flickering flames. As far as the British Isles are concerned, Richard Holland, the author of Haunted Wales, the Survey of Welsh Ghost Lore, offers his own particular thoughts on the nature of this legendary creature. It's been suggested that the Woodwose is a folk memory of some species of early hominid, a pre-Homo sapien ape man, and maybe a few remnants of these wild men still linger in inaccessible places when prehistoric man first hacked their way through Europe's primal forest. They might have been glimpsed by Neolithic settlers in the hearts of what remained of their woodland habitat. In Sproutton in Suffolk, according to John Mitchell and Bob Rickard, the Wild Man Inn was named after a terrifying entity that attacked its builders in the 16th century. They also cite a police report of a horrible, uncouth creature had been living in the woods near Salisbury in Wiltshire and attempted to carry off a farmer's wife. This happened in 1877. And there's a number of witnesses who've also encountered a similar man-beast in northeast Wales. And although some of the stories of the wild man of Sproutton portray him as having been nothing more mysterious than the mad homeless vagrant who dwelled in the woods and lived a distinctly lawless life, there is the possibility he may have been something else entirely. On the north side of the River Gripping that runs from Stowmarket to Ipswich is a place that just happens to be called, and has been called for ages, Devil's Wood, where significant archaeological finds from both Neolithic and Paleolithic times have been made. That Sproutton is only 12 miles from Stowmarket and just 3.5 miles from Ipswich. That ancient man dwelled in this very area, and that the place itself became associated with the devil collectively suggests a distinct possibility the wild man of Sproutton may have been far more than a mere eccentric vagabond. Maybe, incredibly, he was one of the last of his kind, maybe even a Neolithic survivor. One who made his lair in the old woods, and not surprising given the man's wild appearance and mysterious presence, became so linked with matters so dark and devilish. And that raises the question, that was Peter actually a boy who became lost, or was he perhaps a descendant? Well, one of the truly strangest, and many have said wholly outrageous, allegations has been made within the conspiracy-themed research circles is that a relatively innocuous-looking location on Long Island in New York, originally called Camp Hero, later renamed the Montauk Air Force Station, was a location where highly classified research has been undertaken into a dizzying array of far-out issues, such as time travel, teleportation, invisibility, mind control, and the creation of Bigfoot-style creatures. And we're not talking about genetic experiments. No, the claim is that top-secret research is afoot deep below the old base to create Tulpa-style versions of Bigfoot. That is to say, monsters conjured up in the imagination that can be projected outwardly and given some degree of quasi-independent life in the real world. I've heard many, many stories about bizarre things that have happened at Montauk. Weird U.S. notes that on one occasion, one of these attached to the secret experiment, a man named Duncan Cameron envisioned in his mind a large, angry, powerful, Sasquatch-like entity that materialized at Montauk and began destroying the base in a rage. It ultimately decimated the place, tanking the project, disconnecting it from the past. And as soon as the equipment harnessing people's psychic power was destroyed, the beast vanished. Certainly, that all makes sense. Well, from mentally created Sasquatch, let's turn to the Nyamo. Bernard Heuvelmans, one of the most important figures in the field of cryptozoology, said during the course of his research into the Yeti of the Himalayas, he discovered there is no fewer than three distinct kinds of creature that roam those vast mountains. He said his opinion was confirmed in 1957 by a Tibetan Lama by the name of Punyabhayara, a high priest at a monastery at Budnath, who spent 4 months in the high mountains and brought back the surprising but valuable information about the Tibetan mountain people knew three kinds of snowmen. He says there's the Rimi, a man-beast of close to 3 meters in height, who dwelled in the Barankola Valley in eastern Nepal and was specifically omnivorous. Then there's the Rakshi Bumpo, a beast of roughly human proportions, which Heuvelmans said must be the Sherpa's reddish yeti or Maiti that leaves the footprints 20 to 23 centimeters long that the Daily Mail expedition found in a great quantity. And there's the imposing and terrifying Nyamo. The Nyamo are real giants between 4 and 5 meters high with enormous conical heads. They wander in parties among the eternal snows above 4,000 meters. In such empty country, it's hardly surprising they should be carnivorous and even man-eating. Now, according to Heuvelmans, Nyamos really exist. Though many who haven't seen them, of course, wonder if they might just be a myth. He admitted to having heard of accounts of yetis with feet about 45 to 60 centimeters in length, but he was careful to qualify this by stating the evidence is far too slender for us to draw any satisfactory conclusions. He said there is the possibility that the Nyamo are an invented addition to the, based on the belief that yetis increase in size the higher you go. Loren Coleman said when Sir Edmund Hillary went to the Himalayas to look for the Yeti, he and his collaborator, journalist Desmond Doig, noted there were several unknown primates said to be there, still undiscovered in any formal way. Among the varieties was the one called the Nyamo. Now, Hillary and Doig learned that the Nyamo in north central Nepal has quite a history. It's said to be giant-sized, up to 20 feet tall, man-like, hairy, and given to shaking giant pine trees in trials of strength with other Nyamos. No matter the curious behavior of the Nyamo, to which Coleman refers, was most graphically told by one Jean Marquet Rivera. It was in 1937 that the details of this account first surfaced. According to Marquis Rivera, he had occasion to speak with an Indian pilgrim who had personally encountered a group of Nyamo in the wilds of Nepal. Crypto Journal describes the extraordinary encounter in a fashion that suggests the beasts have a high degree of intelligence and may even have some kind of spiritual belief system, which, of course, would be a fascinating discovery. Well, on that note, we come to the end of tonight's show. We'll be back tomorrow, and we'll talk more about the wild men of the woods. Until then, this is Ken Hudnall for the Ken Hudnall Show, saying have a truly great evening.